Welcome to Conversations in Cannabis. Today's episode features Danny Diamond, founder and CEO at California-based trade show Hall of Flowers. This episode was recorded over the phone on November 20th, 2021. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today, man.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start at your beginning, because originally you had gone to school, I believe, for mechanical engineering, and then you got your MBA in finance. Can you kind of tell me what was the leap from doing that kind of stuff in college to eventually ending up in the cannabis industry?
Well, I guess the love for cannabis, right? I mean, you'll be surprised. I used to work for Applied Materials, late 90s, in the heydays of Applied Materials. That was one of the first Silicon Valley companies, actually company that deal with semiconductors and silicon, top engineers from all over the country, and the best of them used to smoke weed. So, through that, after business school, a friend started a fashion trade show in New York and basically offered me to join him. I was looking forward to leave the Silicon Valley and go to New York City and work in fashion. After the tech, that was definitely appealing. And that's how I got to trade shows. In my youth, I did some events, you know, as kind of a side gig. I always loved it. I would say the main thing for me in events, especially trade shows, that there is a deadline. That's the nice about it. You do the best that you can until the deadline. You're trying to miss as least as possible. And, you know, it's not a deadline that you can procrastinate or postpone. People book their hotel, you know, the flights. Yeah. The show must go on.
And the show definitely must go on. I mean, looking at the fashion industry, obviously it's very fast paced, very high end. The marketing in the fashion industry is phenomenal. And you kind of brought that concept over to the cannabis industry, because, you know, by that time, you know, realistically, the only trade shows that were really plant touching in the California region were things like the High Times Cannabis Cup, things that were really more geared towards the consumer, not really high end towards the businesses themselves. And as cannabis kind of moved more into a CPG market, how did you kind of match your branding and match your aesthetic to kind of enter into the cannabis industry?
So I guess one of the things that we did in fashion is first and foremost having a trade show system, booth system that is unique for the show. So if you've seen how it was designed specifically for the show and is not used in any other show. I've seen a lot of stores that have that kind of plywood, natural look looking that was kind of one of the more elevated direction that this industry was taking. And I said, why not to bring it to the trade show? So that that would be maybe the first thing. Then it's like, you know, keep it about the product. So if there is a consistent booth, if there's something that everyone goes by, you know, it can be about the product and not about the way your booth looks. Well, as it evolved by 2019, we realized that, you know, it's not unlike fashion that, you know, they're garments and there can be so many garments on a rack from the smallest boot. Over here, people are focusing on particular SKUs, right? And it's a lot about the branding, like what's differentiate one brand versus the other. So as the time passed by, we allow more branding. And that's how you see the largest boot around the outskirts. Also, if I compare the fashion trade shows in the US to the ones in Europe at the time when I was doing it, there was a show called Bread and Butter. And that used to be a very, I should say, marketing driven. In the US, the trade shows are more sales driven, right? So I get orders, you know, at the end of the show, here's how much I pay for the show. Here's how I made in the show, and this is my ROI. In Europe, it was blends and of sales and marketing. And that's what I see right now happening here in cannabis. So some people are very focused coming to the show, get the orders in place, you know, and some people it's awareness. It's a marketing expense. And you can see also the people that are responsible for the trade show can be different from company to company. In some companies, it's a marketing team, and in some of them, it's a sales team.
Well, and obviously, you know, the look and the feel of these brands have definitely come a long way, you know, just in the last 10 years, let alone since Proposition 215, and then eventually the legalization of adult use through Prop 64 here in California. When you're seeing the evolution of these brands coming through your doors, obviously now we're entering the next season of Whole Flowers. You've seen a ton of brands from here in California. Is there a particular startup that you know stands out in your mind that you're kind of like, wow, they moved the paradigm forward exponentially compared to what everybody else was doing?
I mean, look, when we started, definitely there are some brands that were out there already, one step ahead. You know, Dosis, Candescent, Kiva in the early days, talking end of 17, beginning of 18. I hope I'm not missing anyone. From there, a lot of great companies coming with a lot of amazing creative, right? So it's just, there's so much interesting product out there to choose from. And it's fascinating to see what happens in the market, yeah.
Well, when you're looking at, you know, obviously the shifting of the marketplace from, say, you know, traditional, hey, I got the highest THC flower, to now people are looking at alternative cannabinoids and the totality of the terpene profile of the plant. Did that kind of evolutionary shift surprise you, or were you kind of expecting that, you know, considering that you've seen kind of an evolution of what people look for, you know, in clothes, for example?
Well, I think it also varies, right? It varies of the location that you are, right? So, for example, if we take Palm Springs area, just across the street from where we're going to have our event, there's a local dispensary called The Vault. I became friends with the owner, and he has a wide variety of customers. I mean, there is the retiree looking for one product, and there will be, might be the younger crowd that looking for, you know, the higher THC for the lowest amount of dollar. So it really varies. I don't necessarily see enough of people taking a specific direction. Like, here's the market I'm going after, I'm going to stick to that. So there's, you know, people have the entire assortment in the store. I'm not talking about, you know, pre-roll versus an 8 or vape. Of course, you need to have the entire assortment, but the direction, like the customer that you're going after. I think it's going to happen with time.
It's eventually going to shift. Is there, you know, obviously, yeah, going from the low end to the high end, trying to figure out your demographic, you know, in cannabis, you can't be everything to everyone. And so if there are, you know, startups that are coming in now into the cannabis industry, obviously the green rush is happening in other states. Being, you know, so familiarized here in the California market, is there any advice that you would give to entrepreneurs that are entering the green space in, say, newly emerging markets?
Oh, gosh. Are you referring to like new coming states?
Yeah, like say for instance, like obviously New York just legalized adult use. There's going to be a lot of brands now coming on board. New Jersey legalized adult use. So for instance, you know, brands that are starting to enter into these markets versus say a medical market, what advice would you give to these startups that are trying to decide what their place is in their emerging cannabis industries?
Well, learn as much as possible from existing markets. It doesn't mean that what happened in California will exactly that happen in New York, but learn from experience of others. And again, not just California. And I would say, know your market, know your demographic, know who you're focusing on, understand how you're getting to that market, right? It's also about what's the budget that you have. Are you looking for, are you have a big marketing spend or you have a lower one? Are you then, you know, are you focusing on opening store one by one and, you know, educating the bartenders, or you have the budget for an advertising? That's also important. So it's, I would say know your target market and know how much money you actually have to spend on marketing. And of course, that's after you took into account all the issues of production and licensing, I mean, needless to say.
Well, let's take a look at the BCC. Obviously, you know, the Bureau of Cannabis Control did its merging earlier for the three entities to kind of help streamline regulations in the cannabis industry. Being somebody that's, you know, an operator for the trade show perspective, did you see that as a good thing? And, you know, what are you seeing as far as the regulatory landscape in California? Like, if you could paint the California landscape with a brush and make your own regulations, what would you like to see come out of the newly trifected regulatory agency?
Wow. So I hold only event organizer license, and I had to deal only with the BCC. So I will probably not see a big difference. For others that had to deal with different entities and now they will need to deal with one, right? That's a big advantage. I don't know. Quite frankly, I'm focusing on the regulation that I need to know deeply, and I don't know much about the rest.
Well, let's take a look back at the brands that are attending your show, right? You guys obviously have some of the greatest brands in the California industry as a whole. When you guys are deciding which brands that you want to have at your show, and you're deciding, you know, you're approving different booth designs and things like that, what is some of the thought process that goes through in saying, hey, I need to have this brand at Hall of Flowers?
So we have the luxury, really, to choose. I mean, we always sold out a month and a half out, 2 months out. We are really lucky. Here and there, there's brands that we really want, and the brand is not there. So we are really, really lucky. But we are looking. We're asking the right question. I think, you know, how does your boot do? Will look like? What is your target market? Who are you going after? Are you established already or not? I mean, we're making sure that people know what they're getting themselves into, right? First, and then it's naturally, you know, our values, direction, if you will, coincide with the brands that, you know, I actually have direction, because they understand our aesthetics and they understand where we're coming from. When it comes actually maybe to the largest booths or the outdoor activation, those in specifically, we're asking the question ahead of time. I mean, we're not just having you sign a contract and do whatever you want. We actually want to know what is it that you want to do. It's kind of there is an application process to take one of the 16 spots in our outdoor activation, let's say in Palm Springs.
And when you're looking at some of these larger outer rim activations, you know, obviously it's got to be competitive to get those coveted spots. What are some, you know, things that you're just like, this brand absolutely meets my expectations? Is it that it's established, or, you know, what about some of the, maybe a startup brand that maybe is just coming into the industry that hasn't been established yet? What are maybe some things that you look at from their branding perspective that you would say, you know what, you make the grade?
It's the aesthetics. It's what's the mission behind it? Who's standing behind it? I mean, I can think about the brand that is going to launch that was waiting to launch in Hall of Flowers. There is a brand that, for example, doing it, you know, the, like the coffee capsule.
Yeah.
You're going to put them in a machine and it's going to roll you a joint. So why those capsules? Because it keeps the weed fresh, right? So whenever you roll it, only when you want it. I mean, this is a new thing. It's people with the, you know, good financing behind. It's a fresh product so far, you know. I have heard of a few people trying to put it together, but here is one that actually put it together. And, you know, we listen. We help them at times, you know, help them build their boots, build their activation. Because, hey, they might be great in doing the product, but they might not be have the knowledge of the experiential marketing, let's call it, right? So that's what we're here for. I can think about a brand that was looking to launch in April 2020 for the show that we canceled. And that was their, you know, going to be the first activation. It was going to be an outdoor activation. And they haven't done any live events since, and this is going to be their first one. They haven't even done our Santa Rosa. I mean,
well,
you want me to mention names, but I can. But
if you want to, yeah, for sure.
So this one, for example, is ALT. They were going to launch with us back in 2020, and this is going to be the first event. They already launched the product, but this will be first time coming into the market in a big way. The company that does the capsules, which they're just launching now. It's called Bead, B-E-E-D. And, you know, one of their, they got funding, among others, from the parent company, which is obviously a serious company to have as a company that stands behind you. So definitely there's some credibility over there.
Well, in looking at, you know, brands coming up from starting up and debuting at Hall of Flowers, for instance, I still remember my first Hall of Flowers seeing, I believe it was a Golden State in a small 10 by 10 booth. And now they have an entire corner of one of the halls having grown so much. When you're seeing brands do well who have launched at your event, does that give you kind of a personal pride in seeing their growth?
Of course. And it's, and we will see a lot more than that. Meaning, yes, some of the brands are already successful and some of them will be even more successful and some of them will not survive. I mean, Rama, my partner from Green Street, keeps saying at least he said that a year ago, I'm sure he's still standing behind it, some of those billion plus dollar companies in cannabis haven't even started. So really, we need to keep in mind that the country as a whole, it really haven't even started.
And I was going to say, speaking of Rama, I mean, having a great team around you is imperative in any business venture. When you were deciding your founding team and trying to figure out, you know, who would best complement your ability to throw this show, how did you eventually decide on working with Green Street? How did you get involved with Gary V? Kind of what is the story behind how that eventually came to fruition?
It's actually the other way around. I coming from the trade show business, I thought, a trade show in cannabis would be amazing, but I don't have any relationship. I was actually randomly through a friend was invited to the launch event of Select in California when they came in a big way at the end of 2017. But that was, and again, very randomly my first event. And then a friend of mine, which is also our partner, is a founder of the Agenda Trade Show, ComplexCon. He was approached by Rama about starting a trade show, but he was really busy at the time with another venture he's working on. And he asked me if I'd be interested. And I met Rama, and the rest is history. Rama definitely brought me into the industry, Rama and Green Street as a whole, Rama and Josh. And they made the initial introduction, and from there, I just went ahead and kept running it.
Well, and you guys have been absolutely killing it. This is your first jump into the Southern California market with the launch of your Palm Springs event, December 8th and 9th. What was the impetus to move from Santa Rosa, where you've been since your inaugural launch, to come into the Southern California market? And also as a tie into that, you also did a deal with MJ BizCon to have the Hall of Flowers experience in Nevada. What was the jump to try to get into the Southern California and into the Nevada markets?
So Wait, should I talk about the SoCal first or Nevada?
let's start with Nevada first, because Nevada was the first event that you've had outside of your Santa Rosa location. I had talked with Chris Walsh before MJ BizCon happened. He had mentioned that he loved what you guys were doing. There was good synergy, and that even though you guys were kind of in the same space, there really was no competitive analysis. But I'm curious, from your perspective, you know, what was the drive to say, hey, Chris, I think that we can do this, and how was the event for you?
Yeah, so first of all, the event was great. We had our section over there. It was great just to be part of the people that put the event together, but not have the overall responsibility. I could actually have a nice meal in the evening without being stressed about anything. So that was actually great. But Chris was actually asking me, you know, when we start talking, okay, so what's in it for you? It's not, it was definitely not the money, any money maker or anything like that. So actually for both of us, we planned that for that to be a break even. It ended up being more or less break even. So why did I get into it? I got into it in order to get nationwide recognition. I feel like in California right now, 8 out of 10 people in the industry heard about Hall of Flowers in the East Coast, in the Midwest. Some cases 2 out of 10, how do I get that recognition? Because we have aspirations to go to the East Coast, and that would be an option. And at least, we're getting some of that recognition when we are in MJBs, and, MJBs recognize the strengths and weaknesses. The packaged good branded product is not their cup of tea. And they very happy to partner with us. And we're actually looking to continue this partnership.
So you're looking at the possibility of staying in the Las Vegas market, or you're looking at the possibility of following MJ at the various events that they have across the country?
So far, just Vegas. We are looking on a lot of options. We're definitely looking to grow. Definitely looking to, some markets don't have the critical mass. Okay, so as you've seen, take just the last event, our spend just on the entrance, all those art installation, graphic, all of that what we have, it's about $100,000. We need to have... There needs to be a critical mass. There needs to be some sort of a size, to be able to afford that. Okay, so some markets which are a lot smaller, yeah, sure, you can do a small event with 50, 60 brands. At least right now, that's not our business model. So there are states like Oklahoma that we can maybe have a show, Michigan, right? But the question, instead, in a state like Oklahoma, is that sustainable? There's maybe 2-3 times the number of stores in California, but there maybe state of Oklahoma is a fifth in the population, maybe less than California, right?
I mean, it's probably mostly Texas over there is shopping the Oklahoma market. Did Oklahoma surprise you, though, considering how cheap it was for vertical integration in that state?
No, it didn't surprise me, because it was maybe in many ways similar to what happened in California during the medical era, right? So a lot easier to grow, a lot easier to open a shop. I wouldn't say it surprised me. I don't know what the future will entail, but... But Michigan, for example, Michigan is a market that is a lot more brand driven, let's say, than Oklahoma. And that may be a surprise. The question is also where the East Coast product will be influenced by. More the West Coast, the Midwest, they will have their own direction. When I look at fashion, there's two cities that influence most of it, which is New York and LA. you know, like in the for my fashion days, I learned that, you know, those sales organizations are mostly in New York and LA. Brands will have so-called showrooms in those two places. Right now we are state by state, you know, but what will have the most influence? I mean, if we're looking at fashion, it's going to be New York and LA, but that remains to be seen. So, but the idea is, I mean, the goal is to go East Coast. There's, by the way, potentially an opportunity also in Canada. Canada is a market that opens up for consumption events. So we're looking perhaps to do something over there as well.
And that would
let's
be...
talk, but let...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm excited to talk about Palm Springs, honestly, because yeah, I just came from the venue.
Yeah, I was just about to jump into that. Now that we understand the Nevada market, I'm curious, you know, I obviously Los Angeles is the largest adult use market in the world. When you were deciding on, you know, going into the Palm Desert area and you were like, hey, I want to throw a show down here. You had mentioned that you became friends with the owner of the vault. But what finally drove the nail in to say, hey, this is going to be the place where I'm going to throw my next show?
So we had our eyes on the greater Palm Springs area as early as the first show. We always wanted to have one show in NorCal, one show in NorCal, one in SoCal. For us, everything needs to be 100% compliant. And there's very few places that you can actually, that you allow to do consumption events. You know, we were working for the longest on Long Beach. That didn't work out. We worked on Long Beach through our connection with the convention center, since we had some fashion events there in the past. That didn't work out. And then, you know, the greater Palm Springs area made the most sense. The very advanced when it comes to cannabis, no secrets. So there's a lot of stores there, production, right, cultivation. So events were just natural. And by the time I got there, Palm Springs already working on their own event regulations. And then I found a spot that is on the border of Cathedral City and Palm Springs, 10 minutes from the airport, 12 minutes from the Ace Hotel. It used to be a department store. Burlington Coat Factory, 80,000 square foot of building that is in great shape. So everything inside was going to be our indoor, which in size, it's like, happened to be exactly the size of all the buildings in Santa Rosa, but all under one roof. And then we took the parking lot and created from that the outdoor activation. So basically, we're going to put AstroTurf, and then, you know, they have those trees in the parking lot in between the spots, and that's going to be a whole garden. I think it's going to be really amazing when you look at the utilized square footage. It's really one-to-one with Santa Rosa, but it's more condensed in one space. So there you have the outdoor and the indoor, the dispensary, the food court, but it's all in one. Since we took the parking to create the outdoor activation, we had the issue of parking, but the parking is going to be a mile away, and it's going to be less than a mile away, I should say. And we have plenty of shuttles going back and forth, so it's going to be a seamless experience.
And I have always loved attending the Santa Rosa location, you know, for the Hall of Flowers seasons. Coming now into the Southern California market, I'm very, very excited to see what you guys got coming down the pipeline for that show. Knowing that it's going to be more condensed for veterans, so to speak, of the Santa Rosa show, what can we expect to see at the Palm Springs Hall of Flowers?
We're going to surprise a lot of people. I'm like super excited about it. This first event that we pulled off in September, right after the pandemic, I mean, everyone I talked to said it was the best Hall of Flowers so far. And it's just unbelievable, the energy we created. And people wearing masks, let's not forget that. And no one was complaining about that. So this is, I mean, probably one of the most successful day in my life, just to see everyone smiling. But Palm Springs, again, SoCal, first time. I mean, great hotels, restaurants. That's just everything around the event and every under one roof. And just, you know, turning a department store into an event space. I mean, there is a, you know, there's a building owner that for him is the first time. There is a city that helped us. And, you know, that, you know, we learn together how to do it the right way. So a lot of challenges, but it's just, it's going to have a different energy than Santa Rosa. It's going to be maybe more, we'll have more of a city vibe with the touch of Palm Springs. We're going to see outdoor activations that are, you know, around a central lounge. We're going to see activations that are even more elevated than Santa Rosa because people keep inventing. And it's going to be good. It's going to be good.
Well, I'm definitely excited. Now, just out of curiosity, I got to ask, you know, being somebody that's in the cannabis industry, do you consume yourself? And if so, what is your favorite way to consume?
So I consume Friday night and the Sunday morning. Because if I smoke every day, I hard for me to wake up in the morning and function. Here and there, you know, I'll have a joint in the middle of the week. More like in a social gathering. Mostly pre-rolls.
Any particular strain or terp profile that you really look for?
Honestly, I mean, you can imagine how much product people want me to try. So I seriously forgot how to roll. So, but I try. Hey, I'm old school. I'm from, you know, first time I smoked, I was in the military in Israel, you know. It's, you smoke whatever you got. It used to have stuff that came from Lebanon with a lot of seeds in it. I mean,
I mean it's kind of...
I should say that there are times that, hey, I want to go to sleep. I'll smoke an indica. I'm in the morning, I'll smoke a sativa. Here and there, what will I take for with me to an island, right? It will be a hybrid.
Well, I do,
by the way, I enjoy beverages too a lot. Edibles here and there, but I do like the beverages.
Are you surprised that the beverages have gone more towards the micro versus the macro dosing? You know, seeing things like Can or Gem and Jane, where it's only like, say, 2.5 milligrams of THC versus, you know, say the 215 medical days here in California, where you have the 1,000 milligram drinks on the shelves.
Oh. You know, I'll tell you a story. I used to live in China 2010 and to 2013. And before that I lived in New York, and I had a trip to New York visiting friends. And a friend of mine, her father moved to Colorado and, you know, got into the industry, and she gave me edibles. It's the first time I had edible. It's like, be careful. It was like some sweet, like really small one, you know, share that with cut it to three. And I'm like, I was like, I've done so many things in my life. I mean, what's the big deal of taking one and sharing it with a friend? And we were in a restaurant and we got so high. I mean, it was out of control. And so the industry came a long way. I mean, it's tough for everyone, you know, and I've seen people that, you know, sure, I'll have easily 5 milligram. I mean, if I after a meal, 10 milligram. If I'm not, if I'm on an empty stomach, sometimes 10 milligram will feel a lot. And yes, there's a lot of people that are not consuming regularly, and 2.5 is enough. So no, I'm not surprised. And we see that brands are going a lot more to the mainstream. I mean, it's not a secret.
No, 100%. That's true. And looking at, you know, kind of the future of the cannabis industry and seeing, you know, the evolution of where it's come, say, from the, you know, the extremely high THC strains to now seeing people kind of, again, focus more on the totality of the terp profile, looking at alternative cannabinoid content. In your opinion, what is the future of the cannabis industry look like?
Honestly, my job is first and foremost to focus on the present, you know, and see what's there right now and serve what's there now. I mean, I cannot afford falling in love with any product that is not out there yet. So I'm really trying to focus on the present. But there are going to be specialties. I mean, you know, there's a people that consume specific type of grape of wine. I mean, there's people that like a specific liquor, that, you know, that prefer hard liquor to soft liquor. And we're going to see it. And don't forget that, hey, when I started smoking, I'll smoke whatever comes my way. I mean, the generation that is coming now can be more snobbish about it, more connoisseur, right? So what are they going to consume when they're going to be my age? Who knows? But yes, I'm sure there are going to be specialties.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Danny, I really look forward to seeing what's going on in Palm Springs and your move down into the Southern California market. Been talking with Danny Diamond, founder and CEO over at the California Experiential Cannabis Trade Show Hall of Flowers. Again, Danny, really appreciate your time today, man.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
We would like to thank Danny for his time and being on today's episode. You can find out more about Hall of Flowers by visiting them online at www.hallofflowers.com. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll see you here on the next episode of Conversations in Cannabis.